tied together.
Welcome to another version of America Tonight. Happy holidays as it continues to roll on for many of you across this great nation. We're saying goodbye to 2011, and before you know it, we're into 2012. Where did it all go? I don't know, honestly. We're going to take a look at some of the big political stories at the tail end of this hour, some of the big things that happened, the shockers, if you will. Certainly there were the best and the worst of things in 2011 politically. There were a lot of things to gripe about, I think, and a lot of people to gripe about. But then again, there always is. So who had the biggest black eyes this time around? That, again, is coming up at the tail end of the hour. Also coming up this hour, we're going to take a look back at one of our favorite interviews over the course of 2011. You know, the great thing about doing this job is the fact that I get to talk to so many interesting people, and I hope that you enjoy the fare that we present each and every show, whether it's the movers and shakers, the average everyday person who comes up with something interesting or a different twist on something, or some of the authors that we've introduced you to. It's been kind of a wild year, and certainly we took the show on the road a couple of times, starting with Washington, D.C., talking about health care at the beginning of the year, ending up going to New York City and broadcasting from there, and some of the things that were happening in New York and a few other places along the way, including Tampa, Florida. We went to Tampa, too, and this year we have some interesting things happening, like we're going to New Hampshire for the first primary coming up here in less than 2 weeks, and then we're going to be in Washington, D.C. again. So what's changed in a year as far as health care is concerned? That's one of the major things that's going to be at stake or talked about during this run in 2012 for the Republicans and the current man occupying the White House, Obama, and trying to get reelected. Besides the money, the economy, and jobs, part of that is paying for health care, affording health care, all the things that we've been talking about for the last couple of years. And, of course, the Supreme Court deciding on the individual mandate. Could that be any bigger? And that decision should come down probably in the beginning of June. So what's happening with the Republicans as now there are a lot of states at stake? First, you start with the Iowa caucuses next week, and then, as I said, you roll into New Hampshire for the first primary, and then South Carolina, and it goes on from there, 50 states, of course. And the beginning is the interesting part, I think, and then the middle is also interesting because you get to see where these candidates are, and there seems like there's so many. However, a lot of you feel like there should be some other people, and you're disappointed that some people that you thought might jump into the race, like Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, didn't end up doing that. Is there any chance that there will be a last-minute maneuver and someone you didn't expect to jump into the fray decides they're going to do it? See, I would say I'm not so sure about that, because at this point they would normally be in by now. All of that would have happened in the last couple of months, and it hasn't happened. Doesn't mean that somebody couldn't jump out all of a sudden, but when you look at the contenders, and as you look at the Iowa caucuses, and you look at drawing closer to primary after primary after primary, you can't help but think, this cast of characters, this is pretty much it. I don't see who ultimately would suddenly come out of the woodwork from left field that would blow everyone away, that would just say, this is the guy. And so who cares what happened in the beginning of those primaries, because now we have the tail end, and this is enough to push somebody over the top. Rick Santorum is hoping that his fates and fortunes will change. Pretty much he's been in the single digits in any of the polls. Occasionally he's come out strong in some of the many, many, many debates that have been held, but he has not made the kind of noise that Herman Cain did before he ultimately sunk his own battleship, or that Newt Gingrich is doing right now, or Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, for a while. He was riding high on some very, very big numbers. But he's getting a little bit of a bump, and he thinks that this shows that his campaign is really, really starting to rise.
Our campaign is clearly the one that that is rising right now and has the momentum, and we feel that that's going to continue on over the next week. And as I've said from the very beginning, we're going to surprise a lot of people with how well we do.
All right, he's looking for the surprise, but like I said before, are we really going to see any surprises in this lot? And the answer, I think, is no, not in the beginning of this process, not through January, probably not through February, only if something crazy happens, I think, in the spring. One thing people tend to forget since we started here on a political note, there are a lot of people that are going to step away from politics. There are a lot of other races that are happening, even though this is the big presidential race, and that's what most of the conversation is about. I mean, here's a key man who is stepping aside, the Nebraska Democratic Senator Ben Nelson, who was huge. I just mentioned health care and what's happened with health care in the years since we went to Washington. He announced that he's retiring. He just did that on Tuesday, and all he said is, hey, it's just time for me to leave. It's simply time to go. So there's another opportunity in Nebraska, and there are a couple of other spots where we've seen some retirements, and Barney Frank is another guy we know this a couple of months ago saying this was it for him. So don't forget there are other huge, huge races. I mean, will the Republicans or can the Republicans win a majority in the Senate next November or not? Do the numbers favor them? Do these Democratic retirements end up helping them at all? Or no, will they not really have much of an advantage? Right now, we don't know. I think it's just too soon to call that, because who's running and where are the key weak points, weak states where there might be a big switch there where people are frustrated and they want to see some kind of a change. And that's going to be a lot of what we talk about heading into the new year, the change that people want to see, not just with politicians, but just in general. How we're all living our lives, some of the scary things that have started to happen, and the fact that we haven't seen much of a change in the housing industry. I mean, it's been bleak for 12 months. Depending on where you live, that location, location, location couldn't even be a bigger phrase, honestly. In just talking to people whose homes are underwater, if you're ahead of the game, but just a little bit, count yourself lucky. Rather than being underwater and trying to figure out a way to get out of that, trying to figure out a way to turn all of that around. All right, as I said, coming up on America Tonight, we have a couple of interesting guests coming your way. And then at the tail end of the hour, we're going to look back at 2011, at least in politics, who were some of the real bozos for the year, and what were some of the more interesting stories, some of the things that we had to deal with and some of the things that many of you blew out the phone lines on trying to get through, to weigh in, to throw your two cents in on whatever was at stake, you thought, in your own backyard and, of course, for this great nation as well. So stick around. Stay with us as we continue to kick the can down the road in what's left of 2011. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Hey, everybody. Jason Lewis here once again. These are hard times for investors. If you're like me, you just don't know where to put your money because there's a downside to every possible scenario. Now, look, every portfolio needs a hedge for inflation. Gold has been the classic. I want to tell you, I want to be honest with you, commodities fluctuate. So you could lose money. Gold goes up and down. But every stable portfolio usually has an inflation hedge, and gold is, well, the gold standard. Washington is not going to get us out of this recovery. So you've got to protect yourself. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but it's lost a lot of its value since then. Call Midas Resources today, 1-800-686-2237 for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to FakeTV.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to FakeTV.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
Well, it's no surprise that everybody knows what a great big dog lover I am. Ever since I got my golden retriever, Mahalo, he's provided hours of fun, and hopefully we're providing hours of fun for him, too. Some of the crazy things that we've gotten into and the cool things that we've been able to do because of Mahalo. A lot of you know you've sent me pictures of your dogs and told me about your stories. We're going to introduce you to another dog lover who's written a book. He is an author now. He's a film and TV composer, Alan Lazar, and he owns two dogs, Milan and Nelson. He's got the book out called Rome. Hey, Alan, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Kate? Thanks so much for having me on the show, huh?
Well, thanks so much for coming on. First of all, I got to ask you about the names of your dogs, Milan. Is that Milan because of Milan, Italy?
It is. You know, it was one of those names when she was born, when she was a little puppy. We kind of gave it to her because we couldn't think of anything else, and then it just kind of landed up sticking. So it was one of those names by default, which we now like very much.
And the same thing, what happened with Nelson's name?
Nelson is just a name that I've kind of always liked, and there are a lot of kind of heroic Nelsons going through history, Lord Nelson of the British fleet and Nelson Mandela, and I just thought it had a really sort of great statesman-like sound to it, so I thought it would be a great hero's dog name.
I like that. And what kind of dogs are your dogs?
They're actually both miniature poodles. You know, I am actually allergic to dogs, which is really bad considering I'm such a dog lover. Every dog I see, I just want to go and hug. But I do actually get sneezes and asthma from them. So I can only have a hypoallergenic dog in our home, which is why we have poodles, which are amazing dogs, actually. They're such smart dogs, and they're just wonderful companions.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you. So how does a guy who, by the way, I'm sure a lot of people recognize your name, but just in case they don't, I mean, you just so many, I can't even, off the top of my head, I'm thinking Sex and the City, you wrote the theme to that, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills films, too. Before we jump into the dogs, the of all the films that you did, because you've done at least 30 films, and you've written scores for so many. What was your favorite one to do?
You know, I think most recently it was an amazing movie called An American Crime, which Catherine Keener actually got a Golden Globe nomination for. It's a really scary thriller set in Indiana. And that was probably my favorite score. I really love doing the music for that.
And when you do a score, do you do it where you're, are you watching dailies or you have a flavor of the film, or how does that work for you?
Generally, I'm watching dailies or a rough cut of the movie. Although I must say the last couple of years, I've noticed that's changing quite a bit. You know, for instance, the movie Inception, which was scored by Hans Zimmer, that was the first really big budget movie where he actually wrote the music before they edited the movie. And that's starting to happen a lot more. Actually, when I do tracks for Real Housewives, that's the way we do it, because the editors like to kind of edit to music. And it's really fun for a composer because I kind of get to set the tone of things before they actually edit anything.
I was going to say, I think that's interesting to do it that way. And also, when you did it the other way, I wondered what, if they would make you sign a non-disclosure form, because you're seeing the movies before we get to see the movies.
Actually, what they do is that they stamp my name all over the picture. So if I ever were to like leak out that picture, my name would be all over it. That's the way they protect themselves.
Yeah. Oh, how neat. So you. So what a fascinating career you have. And now you, as you mentioned, you're a dog lover, and you have your miniature poodles, and you like all the dogs that you meet and you see. So how did you come up with this concept for, okay, I'm going to put this book together? What led you in that direction?
You know, when I was a teenager, I loved a book called Jonathan Livingston Seagull, which I think has inspired a lot of people. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I got the idea to do that sort of book, that like adventure book with a bit of a, you know, inspiring twist to it. I wanted to do that sort of book with a dog as the hero. And then what happened is I started seeing a lot of articles in the newspapers about dogs that had been lost for 2 or 5 or even 10 years and were reunited with their owners thanks to the miracles of chip technology. Very, very recently, there was actually a case where an amazing pit bull called Petunia, who was lost in Virginia 8 years ago, was found in California recently and was actually reunited with the owners for Christmas. And these sort of stories just fascinated me because, you know, what happened to the dogs in that time? How did they survive? How did they travel so many thousands of miles? And that was kind of the impetus for me to write Rome, to try and answer some of those questions, which I think a lot of dog owners would probably be interested in.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, if we could just get into their minds, can you imagine the stories that we would hear of what it would be like on that kind of a journey? I can't even imagine.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think in general, I think folks are fascinated by adventure stories. I think they speak to all of us. They like every man, every woman's stories about life and surviving and love lost and found and, you know, the importance of family, really, at the end of it. And there's a lot of that in Rome. It's a book for dog lovers, but I think it's a book for anyone interested in, like, a journey through life. What's it all about?
Yeah, I agree with that. I noticed in Rome, too, that in your book, the story centers around a lost dog named Nelson. So there you're borrowing a little from your own personal life. Now, how long did you decide? How did you come up with the amount of years and the miles? Because as you said, you read about all these stories that many of us have read about and talked about. We've talked about them here on America Tonight. You just decided, ooh, 8's kind of a good number, and we're going to make it a lot of miles.
You know, it was kind of, I just wanted something that would represent a really big portion of a dog's life. And, you know, little dogs can live 10, 15 years. And I wanted to cover the whole lifespan from when Nelson in the book was born until he's an old age dog. And that 8-year period of being lost kind of was the figure that emerged that made the most sense, you know?
Yeah. And in the, because what always people want to know, and this is always the first thing I think of, ooh, how did the dog get lost? How did this dog find its way away from its owner? In this dog, it's, sadly, it's about a girl who doesn't, am I right, doesn't latch the gate one day, right?
Well, I think, you know, my story, Katie, who's the lead human character, she's a concert pianist. And she picks up Nelson at a pet store. And Nelson is actually a mutt in my novel, Rome. And nobody wants him. They want to get a pedigree dog. And she's the one who kind of picks him out and gives him a home. And she becomes his great love. In my book, there's the concept that all dogs' first owners is their great love. It will be this love for the rest of their lives. Unfortunately, some problems ensue in Katie's marriage. And one day her husband actually leaves the gate open by mistake. in the midst of their kind of marital turmoil. And Nelson is, he loves his owner, but at the same time, he's a very curious dog. He smells all these amazing things on the wind, and he decides he's going to go out and explore, as many dogs would, given, you know, the same situation. And that sets the path for his long journey, for 8 long years, trying to find his owner and, find his way home. Which,
which is pretty scary when you think about it. Like we said, can you imagine being in that mind, wondering what's happening? And Rome, talking about what you're talking about, you also mentioned at the end some pretty sobering statistics, which I think is great. I'm so glad that you did that, Alan, because people don't realize often what they're doing with the population of dogs. And then I hate the idea that you have dogs that just can't get adopted and they have to be euthanized. So you talk about that at the very end, right? You talk about the statistics of spaying and neutering dogs. For some reason, I don't understand how people make that disconnect. When you adopt a dog, you have to do this. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I didn't know the figures until I actually wrote the book, and then I started doing more research just because I wanted to make everything as realistic as possible. And what I discovered is pretty shocking. Like, between 4 and 5 million dogs and cats are euthanized in shelters every year. And, a lot of folks would say, well, if there weren't pedigree, dog breeders out there, a lot of those dogs in shelters would actually get adopted by loving homes, which is what they want to do. And, I think that the other thing, which I took away from my research, is that one unspayed female and her offspring can reproduce 67,000 dogs over the course of 5 years, because they're 2 to 15 pups in each litter. And if each of those goes on to reproduce, that is actually the figure, 67,000. So, Rome is meant to be an inspiring story and a piece of entertainment, but I think if there's a message at the end of it, it's keep the dog spayed, put a microchip in them, and, next time you need a new pet, just go down to the shelter. There's a dog or a cat just waiting for you there.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. Before we let you fly, I got to ask you about this, because, of course, you're a composer. We talked about that as well during this interview, and you apparently have written 7 original songs about Nelson and his adventures. Is this true?
Yes, it is. When we were busy editing the book, my editor, the publisher, suggested, knowing that I was a composer, she suggested that I actually write some music to accompany the book, which at first I was like, wow, that's a kind of unusual idea. And then the more I thought about it, it was like, well, that can actually enhance the emotional experience for listeners. So I wrote these 7 piano pieces, which can be accessed by Microsoft Tags, which you scan with your iPhone while you're reading. Or you can also go to my website, alanlazar.com. That's alanlazar.com. And the pieces are also there on the website. And they're meant to be kind of listened to at 7 key points in the story. So you kind of take a break from reading and listen to some music. And I was pretty happy with the way it turned out. And we've been getting great feedback from readers. So.
What an innovative thing to do, too, with technology. Alan, good luck with the book. Everybody can go pick it up. He mentioned his website already. You can get it wherever books are sold, of course, and it's called Rome. Alan, happy holidays, and thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Thanks so much, Kate. And happy.
Ready to save while getting prepared? Then you're ready for the winter sale at 21stCenturyGoods.com. Take advantage of the incredible savings on all items at 21stCenturyGoods.com. Portable AM, FM, and shortwave radios from $19.95. American Red Cross emergency radios and Kato radios from $28.95. Solar lanterns from $22.95. Solar flashlights, 2 for $16.95. Hand crank LED hurricane lanterns and flashlights from $8.95. Be sure to check out the flexible solar panels to power your emergency and survival gear. Every order over $75 will receive a solar-powered flashlight absolutely free. So get prepared this winter by visiting 21stCenturyGoods.com. Spelled the number 2, the number 1, ST, CenturyGoods.com. 21stCenturyGoods.com. Or call 866-999-8422. That's 866-999-8422. 21stCenturyGoods.com. Power up your survival.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
UtopiaSilver.com believes, as the Declaration of Independence states, that our rights come from God, not from government. The only lawful purpose of any government is to protect and secure the rights of the people, and no man or government has the authority to take what has been given to us by God. Among these rights are life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. And America's government has ceased to be the protector of liberty and of the people's God-given rights. But we, the people, can return America to greatness if we are willing to stand up and reassert our stolen rights. We ask that you join Utopia Silver in changing America's course in history. To save on health care and improve your health, call Utopia Silver at 888-213-4338. For a limited time, new customers will receive 50% off all colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com. Or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338.
Jason Lewis here. With the holidays just around the corner, be sure to consider the greatest gift you can give to your friends and family: peace of mind. That's why I choose WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com offers delicious ready-made meals like cheesy lasagna, savory stroganoff, and pasta Alfredo that are packaged for freshness in individual metal Mylar pouches and carry a 25-year shelf life. And they're ready to eat in minutes. Simply add hot water. Request a free entree sample today at WiseFoodStorage.com. And for a limited time, get free shipping and 10% off of your order. That's right, a free entree, free shipping, and 10% off any order. Just use promo code Lewis. Call 855-FOODWISE. That's 855-366-3947. Or visit wisefoodstorage.com. That's Wise, W-I-S-E, foodstorage.com. Gourmet emergency food at the best price and the greatest gift you can give to the ones you love this holiday season.
The perfect water for drinking, bathing, and cleaning. Right at your fingertips? Yes, you can now have the most powerful water ionizer on the market for less than half the price of competitors. The Genesis Platinum Water Ionizer from GibsonsHealth.com creates the perfect drinking water of 9.5 pH, automatically cleans every time you use it, and even tells you when to change filters. Other 7-plate water ionizers are priced at $2,000 or even $3,000. But the Genesis Platinum is only $16.95. Get yours today at GibsonsHealth.com. Under Nutritionals, be sure to click on Essential Oils for aromatic liquids extracted from a broad range of flowers, stems, seeds, and bark. And to really balance your body, click on Go Green, the most complete green drink available, necessary for survival. All this and more are found at GibsonsHealth.com. Call 800-388-6844. That's 800-388-6844 or GibsonsHealth.com. Healthful living since 1974.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast, and all those nooks and crannies in between. I've read the most fascinating book. I mean, the most fascinating book, Robopocalypse. Remember that name. It's on bookshelves everywhere. And I don't want to give away the whole tale because we are very excited to have the author of this book on the show. But I will tell you this. I know a lot of people, when they do talk shows, you don't have time. You can't really go through all the books. I had a copy of the book, and I read it cover to cover. It was so riveting that I found myself wanting to get to the finish. I wanted to get all the way through it, and just a tremendous, tremendous read. And I don't lightly endorse books, and no one's paying me to endorse it, but I just want to tell all of you that I really liked it. Daniel H. Wilson, he's the guy who wrote this tomb. And Daniel, you just heard what I said. I enjoyed this to death. I love it. Talking about technology, the whole idea of robots, basically, and humans and the struggle. And the hint is, you know, apocalypse. First of all, so let's rewind this. Tell me how you came up with this. Give the audience a little thumbnail background, because you have a little bit of a background in this.
Yeah.
What drove you to write this?
Well, let me say I'm already having a great time in this interview. Thank you very much, Kate.
You're welcome.
Well, so, you know, my background is in robotics. I started out studying computer science. I started out trying to write science fiction as a kid, and, you know, I didn't cut it right away. So I did the next best thing and got a degree in computer science. And then while I was studying that, I figured out that you could program a machine not to just solve a problem, but to learn how to solve a problem. And I really got into artificial intelligence. And so then I went to graduate school, and I didn't quit until I had finished a graduate degree in robotics.
And then was when I started writing books about robots. So I've been thinking about technology and robotics for longer than I care to admit.
There you go. So always in the back of your mind. And people, a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people are confused by technology. Robotics confuse them. But robotics really, essentially, in just the basic element of it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, this is the wave of the future, right? A lot of things are already happening in this direction.
Yeah, robotics is really exists at an intersection of a lot of other fields. I mean, robots are really solution to problems, you know? So you have medical robotics, there's obviously space robotics where we're shooting probes out into the solar system and landing them on Mars. There are consumer robots that come into your house and vacuum and things like that. There's, of course, industrial robots that are building our cars and our products. And then there's a whole other class of just artificial intelligence, which are not, it's not really embodied, you know, you can't see it, but these are basically little thinking machines that are solving problems. Like, you know, when you push your brakes, you're not, these days with a new car, you're not physically braking your car, you're actually telling a little machine to engage the analog brake system, and it's deciding based on, you know, lots of sensor readings about what's going on with the car and with the surface of the road, it's deciding exactly how to optimally break your car. And so these little things are sort of popping up in between us and the world and making little decisions for us. And, you know, we're not really that aware of it.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, I'm sure you're aware of this. I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 6 months ago or so, maybe a little bit longer. Do you remember on Jeopardy, they had the computer program to play the two smartest guys who had ever played the game? And that was so fascinating to me. And I'm assuming some of that is that artificial intelligence that we're talking about, right?
Well, that's absolutely a shining example of very advanced artificial intelligence. And in fact, I think by definition, the hardest problem that there is to solve in artificial intelligence is called the natural language problem, and it's creating a machine that can just have a conversation with a human being, and it's a really difficult problem, and I think Watson took it the furthest in terms of a solution to that problem by being able to interpret those very tricky questions and come up with the right answer. You know, typically, human language is so unconstrained. You know, we can say anything. That what scientists like to do is they like to bolt down the problem and narrow down the problem so that they can have, less of a search space to find the answer. So, you know, competing on a game show is a very small slice of what it takes to just have a conversation with a human being. Obviously, there's lots of rules on the game show and ways to answer your questions, but it's a huge step forward, I think, towards solving the natural language problem.
Yeah, with all this background that you had, the degrees and the experience, and now you use it to become an author, did you ever think that you would end up here in this situation that you're in right now?
Well, you know, I've written 6 books that nobody knows about. and I just, you know, this book is my first work of adult fiction. You know, it's my first big boy book that that is hardcover, and, you know, it's doing great. So, you know, I started to doubt whether I would ever be right here. But I'm very happy to be here after all this time.
Yeah, no kidding. It's funny that you say that. I had a meeting today with an author in a horror genre, and he's got a book that's taken off, and Penguin is doing the book and whatever. But he said the same exact thing that you said, that he has all these books that he did before, and that he said the verbatim, this is his first adult book. And he said did you learn mistakes along the way as you were writing? Because now you've had some practice, and then, boom, you put it into this, and it's a huge success.
Well, yeah, you know, all my other books were nonfiction, and so I was really learning how to convey my ideas, but you never know if your style, with fiction, it's a lot about style, you know, about how you write and the immediacy of it, and are people going to think that, you know, it's like a kindergartner who wrote it, or are they going to, you know, really get swept up in it? And so that's a little bit, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen with that. And so you kind of just have to throw it out there and hope that people like your style, because you can't really change your style. You know, you write the way you write, and that's pretty much it. So I was very happy that people are enjoying not only what happens in the book, but also the way it's written.
How did you come up with that plot? How long did it take you to write this book and come up with that plot?
the plot was really the hardest part, you know. I mean, I had all these scenarios in my head about what I wanted to do. I mean, I knew I wanted – I'm from Oklahoma. I knew I wanted cowboys out there, and I wanted them on robots. I knew what kind of robots I wanted and the scenarios. I had certain scenes in my head, but I really needed to find a good way to be able to visit all these scenes that I wanted to put in there. And so, you know, the way the book works is it really jumps between a lot of different characters over a big course of time. And so, you know, the other thing I wanted to do was I wanted to start out before all the stuff happened. You know, I wanted to see this world that's going to get torn down. And, you know, you got to build up a tower out of blocks before you knock it down to get any satisfaction. So I really spent, you know, a good portion of the book setting everything up before everything, all the bad stuff starts happening. So, you know, I guess those are my main motivations with the structure of the book.
And, you know, and for people who don't know, we don't want to give away everything because, of course, we're giving away some books. We know people want to go out and buy the book, so we don't want to give the whole thing away. But let's just say the robots attack the humans, and, boy, you have some really frightening scenes in there.
Well,
with a lot of scary stuff right from the get-go.
Well, you know, so the robot uprising is a pretty common theme. You know, whenever there's robots, it seems like they always try to kill everybody. And I know that. And that's my first book was called How to Survive a Robot Uprising. And I wrote it because I wanted to get back at all of the all of the people that had written books where and made movies where the robots were the bad guy, because I was surrounded by roboticists every day. And we're all trying to build robots to help people. And then they all get a bad rap, you know, in the press. So, you know, I'm familiar with all of the basic robot uprising scenarios, and I wanted to take advantage of the fact that everybody else is pretty familiar with them, too, so that the reader could really hit the ground running whenever they pick up the book. But then that's when I wanted, once I got you reading the book, that's whenever I really try to take it to an original place and really draw on my background and give the reader kind of a unique experience, so it's not just a rehash of all the robot uprisings that you've already seen before and read about before, and that I've already seen before.
Yeah, no kidding. We're speaking with Daniel H. Wilson. Robopocalypse is the name of the book that he's written. We're talking about that, of course. Daniel, and this has been optioned for a movie, am I right?
Yeah, so the it just was really incredible. I wrote 100 pages of this book, and I took that sample and gave it to my agent, and she sent it to some publishing houses, and then somebody, I don't know who, but they, I love them. I need to send them some champagne or something, because they leaked those pages and they made their way to DreamWorks, and then DreamWorks optioned the rights to the book, you know, a day before it even sold. And it was just incredible. It happened in one day. And then around 6 months later, Steven Spielberg announced that he's, you know, attached to direct this thing, which is just, I kind of felt like maybe I was just dreaming that, but apparently it's true. Yeah, it was just kind of an incredible series of events there.
No kidding. And do you know anything? I mean, because, of course, all this is happening, like you said, what a dream, DreamWorks. But having him direct that, just thinking of that and thinking of the movies, can you imagine? Have you even dreamed up in your mind who might play some of the parts?
No, I never do that. I'm not very good at memorizing who the actors are.
I love that.
But I really am not. I don't know why. People ask me to cast things that I've written and say, well, who do you see? I'm just like, well, the guy I wrote. Can we get him? Can we get him?
Exactly. When when you option that, because I know it goes both ways, does he just take it, your material, and he's allowed to have a little bit of license with it, or how does that work?
You know, the way it works is Hollywood buys the rights to your book, and then that's it. They can do whatever they want. So, you know, the fact that they've even, you know, they've kept up with me and kept me apprised of what's going on, and I've been able to go out and visit with the filmmakers, and I've even been able to have a little bit of input on some of the robot designs, and that is all just by the grace of DreamWorks that happens. And so, you know, I'm really appreciative any time that I get a call from the screenwriter or the production designer. But it really is to their credit. I mean, they're drawing on me as a roboticist, not creatively. They've already got all my creative input, you know, in the book, and they'll do what they want with that. But they'll send me, you know, pictures of robots and say, you know, what do you think? And I'll say, well, you know, this bit here is not very realistic. This bit here is great. I could really see that working. And then they either take my advice or they don't, but, you know, they are at least asking.
So, there you go. Excellent. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5 or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com and now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with 4 of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Folks, have you lost your power and wanted to simply flip a switch to get the lights back on? If so, this is going to be the most important message you'll ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get ready for the winter power outages ahead. Here's why. Solar power generators are now available from our friends at Solutions from Science, one of our oldest sponsors. Their emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running quietly in your own home. Whether it's ice storms, brownouts, or blackouts, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. When the power goes out this winter, you'll be ready with a solar power generator from Solutions from Science. Go to mysolarbackup.com for more information. That's mysolarbackup.com or call 877-327-0365.
What happened, man? You used to be energetic, happy, and wow, did the ladies love you. Now you fall asleep on the couch, irritable, and out of shape. Don't be that guy. Call now for a risk-free trial of Ageless Male, a natural supplement shown to raise testosterone by 50% and maintain healthy, normal levels. No injections, no appointments. With healthy testosterone levels, you can feel that energy again, that great outlook again, and yes, even a healthy sex drive. Right now, you can try Ageless Male risk-free. There's nothing to lose, guys. If you're a man who's noticed changes in your body, your mood, your sex life, call now for a risk-free trial of Ageless Male. Be the guy you used to be. Just call 1-888-246-0623. Don't wait another day. Just call 1-888-246-0623. Again, 1-888-246-0623.
The last couple of days of 2011 with me, Kate Delaney. Hope you had a fabulous holiday. And if you're hanging around, you feel like kicking in and adding your 2 cents on what the big stories were politically in 2011, please do 800-259-5791 or shoot me an email at americatonight.net. I hope a lot of people do have off, actually. I mean, what a way to end the year, spend the last week with family and friends or just chilling out and getting things together before you have to go back to work again. We're going to talk about, like I said, the big political faux pas, really, of 2011. But before we do that, just a couple of quick things. We know that Iowa this time next week will be deep into who wins the Iowa caucuses. Right now, it favors, and that keeps switching, but Paul is up 1.7%, shall we say, when it comes to Republicans and the average. In New Hampshire, Romney looks like he's up by 17. That, of course, is January 10th. And South Carolina, you're talking about Gingrich. He's up 16. And in Florida, on January 31st, Gingrich is up 18. So you got Gingrich mixed into there. You got Ron Paul and Mitt Romney. We'll see when it actually comes down to it, when the chips are all out there. And, of course, it's about the delegates and looking at the election calendar and what the latest polls are for those that are running in 2012. And as I just said, this is how it goes. First, you've got New Hampshire. Well, first you have Iowa, then you have New Hampshire, and then it tracks from there, South Carolina and Florida. And all the polls are a little bit different from Gallup to Rasmussen, but the spread is what's so interesting. In Iowa, if you took the spread of all the latest polls, Ron Paul would be up. He would, you know, get a basically a plus four. Ron Paul would have 24 to Romney's 20. And if you looked at Gallup and in the presidential nomination, just the race flat out, you'd have Gingrich at 25, Romney at 24, and Ron Paul at 11. Now, John Edwards, not too long ago, in 2008, really, really, really wanted to be president. And he was one of the many Democrats running to grab that nomination. A lot of people thought because of some of the things that he had done with poor people, some of the programs he had started, that maybe he'd be that dark horse coming around the final turn. But boy, things really blew up for him. And 2011 for John Edwards was about staying out of prison, frankly, because of the fact that the investigation was full on and then, of course, went ultimately into a courtroom as to whether or not he took PAC money, money that people donated to pay for a girlfriend who became a girlfriend, then the mother of his child, if he took the money or not. And it became an ugly, twisted mess for him. And, of course, Elizabeth Edwards, her death, and then ultimately what happened in 2011 with him trying to clear his name of taking money to support the girlfriend along the election route in 2008. He ended up coming out and making statements out of the courtroom eventually because everybody wanted to know what John Edwards was thinking. And to me, he certainly deserves one of the big black eyes in 2011. And here's what Edwards had to say during one of those tense moments. All right, so we'll try to get Edwards cut for you. But as I said, John Edwards talking about going down that wrong road and how twisted it was for him, and how he tried to extricate himself from it. In fact, here we have it. Take a listen.
There's no question that I've done wrong, and I take full responsibility for having done wrong. And I will regret for the rest of my life the pain and the harm that I've caused Doug's. But I did not break the law, and I never, ever thought I was breaking the law.
Yeah, in the meantime, what he's trying to do is he is looking to get, he's looking to be able to rest on the side for a couple of weeks, saying that he had a personal thing he had to deal with, a personal a malady he had to deal with. He's also trying to repair that relationship with Riley Hunter, who is the mother of his, what you would call, love child, the former mistress. And so I think that's why he gets a double black eye, because he's got this, everything that's this imminent trial that's looming over him. And here we are just through Christmas, and the disgraced senator is now said to be kind of desperate, at least that's what a few of the papers are reporting, to hook up with his former mistress, and has even asked her to move into his home. So he's trying to repair that relationship, because now this little girl is a couple of years old, and you know, what happens with Edwards, who knows, is he really, really, really of anyone who sunk themselves, he would have to be at the top of that list, because he denies the charges, and you heard it there, and the trial is due to start in February, where he would face maybe 30 years in prison, even $1 million fine if he's convicted. And he was indicted by the federal grand jury in June, this past June, so 2011 was rough on him, on 6 felony charges that he illegally used campaign funds, like I said, to cover up that extramarital affair. Boy, that would be a costly thing, wouldn't it? And I think there's a good chance that John Edwards could find himself in prison for that. We'll, you know, ultimately we'll see, because it still has to go to trial. You know, innocent until proven guilty and all of that. Even in the court of a public opinion, though we think he is. Let's turn to another one. The other black eye, I would say, is Anthony Weiner, who, without a doubt, this is such a layup to even talk about him. But this was just became a laugher of a situation where, once again, you had somebody in the here in the Democratic Party who was a rising star and had people who just adored him in his district, and talk about tossing it all away. He served the 9th congressional district from January 99 until June of 2011. And that's also when he went down in flames and could no longer hide behind trying to step away from the sexting scandal. He just could not do it. So they ended up having a special election in September to fill the remainder of his term, and a Democrat didn't even get that position. Instead, who was elected was a Republican who was unknown, an unknown Republican. So here he had been a councilman, had gotten that seat in Congress, and was somebody who the Democrats were looking at as maybe a future even presidential choice. And once he started to take pictures of his package and picked up these relationships with various women constantly on the BlackBerry and constantly sending photos and all this other kind of crazy stuff, that was it. Then he ultimately had to resign from Congress on May 27th, 2011. And here's what that sounded like.
I'd like to make it clear that I have made terrible mistakes that have hurt the people I care about the most, and I'm deeply sorry.
Today I'm announcing my resignation from Congress.
Yeah!
So my colleagues can get back to work, my neighbors can choose a new representative, and most importantly, that my wife and I can continue to heal.
And you can see he was being heckled about what he had did to the people that he represented and all that other stuff. It was just too easy. It was like taking candy from a baby. Definitely, definitely, it was a year that John Edwards sunk and that Anthony Weiner sunk as well. They certainly weren't the only ones, but they probably were the biggest boobs of all of them, I think, when we look back at 2011. Any thoughts on the show, send them to me at americatonight.net.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
Worse? How could they get any worse? Take a look around you, Alan. We're at the threshold of hell.